Imagine a Magnum. Now imagine eating a Magnum Double Cherry. Now imagine biting into thick, cracking chocolate and tasting the delicious combination of berries and cream with an irresistible cherry sauce. Or indulge in Magnum Double Hazelnut, thick, cracking white chocolate with salted hazelnut sauce. Take your pleasure beyond with the new Magnum Utopia Double Cherry and Double Hazelnut. Magnum, true to pleasure.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. Nice Wednesday morning. Tim, are you happy, Tim? Are you happy?
It is a good morning. Yeah, it's a good morning. It was, I'm glad the series is over. I'm glad that Brad Marchand is a cup winner once again. I had to wear my Red Sox hat tonight. I'm doing good. How you doing?
Because Marchand played for the Red Sox. It makes total perfect sense. You must be upset about the DeVere's trade, Rafael DeVere's.
I'm not upset that they traded him. I am upset that they didn't even try to. It's the Joe Thornton thing. They literally picked up the phone. What do you want? Okay, here you go. Like that's anyway. We're not here to talk about baseball.
Back to hockey. The Panthers won the Stanley Cup. I think it was. Well, it wasn't a foregone conclusion because the Edmonton Oilers, they have the two best players on the planet, and coming into Game Six, I think everybody expected them to have some kind of a pushback. And to be quite frank, there wasn't much of a pushback. It was a complete, and I know that the term masterclass is being thrown around out there by everybody. Oh, it's such the popular fancy, everybody's saying masterclass by the Florida Panthers last night. The Panthers showed they were the better team. I think that's what it was. They came in with the game plan, they executed it, and everybody was pulling on the rope. There was no individuals on this team from top to bottom, from your $10 million goaltender to your superstar centerman to your fourth line winger. Everybody was playing the same way with one common goal, and that was to win the Stanley Cup. And they executed Paul Maurice's and his coaching staff's game plan perfectly, to a T. They got scoring chances galore. They smothered the Edmonton Oilers. They clogged up the neutral zone, and they did what the Panthers do. They won their way, Tim. They didn't have to buckle. They didn't have to play another team's game, and they have done it throughout the playoffs. This is our game. You will play our game, and we will beat you that way. That was it, and they've done it for 3 years now, ever since they got Matthew Tkachuk, and we'll get into all of this. But my overall kind of synopsis of the series was the first four games were entertaining, but the Panthers were the better team in each one of those games. And games five and six, I feel like they just took over. I don't feel like it. They did. They dominated. They showed their dominance. They are the alpha males. They took it to the Oilers, and the Oilers did not have a response. And that's it. And now we have a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion. Florida Panthers have been there 3 years in a row. We could be looking at the next dynasty. It is a modern-day dynasty, what they're doing. So it was a pretty lackluster game, though, Tim, all in all.
You know what's funny is because the game last night, I had a lot of fun watching it because, you know, it was just exciting. The home team at home, like, wins the cup, which you don't get to see every year. It's always more fun. The building's rocking. You just got, you know, great plays and everything. So I go to bed, and Julia said last night, my girlfriend was like, kind of a boring game. And I was like, no, I don't think so. This morning I woke up and I was like, you know what? That sort of was a boring game. It felt like it was over in the first period. And I grabbed this quote. I read Greg Wyshynski, friend of the show, posted an article late last night. And he quoted an unnamed NHL player who said, quote, "It's the bad boy mentality. They embody it. They hit you and they stand over you and tell you how much better they are than you." And the Panthers do this just about every night. And it felt like this one in particular was over in the first period. And that's not really super exciting, but I'm glad that they won.
Yeah. And we were doing the same thing when I was watching it. Me and my buddies, it was just the first period's over 2-0. And then like we talked about before in game five, you expect the pushback. And then you look up, and the second period's almost over. And then you look up on Sam Reinhardt scored, and it's 3-0. And then you look up, and the game's almost over. They sucked the life out of the game.
It did happen just like that, yeah.
Yeah, and they're not playing trap hockey. they're just playing methodical dump and chase cycle on the forecheck, playing good defense, not giving up any chances, not sacrificing defense. And it's just one shift after another shift after another. There's no whistles. They don't take whistles. There's no icings. There's no face-offs. There's no scrums. They had a workmanlike attitude. And yeah, the minutes just bleed off the clock. It's amazing. And then you go, holy crap, the Oilers need to score three. And they only have 8 minutes left. Like that. And it just keeps happening. And McDavid's trying and Drysdale's trying and no one else is doing anything. And next thing you know, the game's over and it's 5-1. It's crazy how it happens like that in a blink of an eye.
It was 3-0 late in the third. And I'm thinking in my head, okay, if the Oilers have a chance, there's like, you know, 2 or 3 minutes left in the second. And I said that they got to score. They got to score now. Like, get a goal before the second ends. Get some momentum. Get something you can build off of in the locker room. Then they don't do it. Third period starts. I'm like, okay, it's really important. And just trying to rationalize how they can come back. Okay, they got to score early. They got to get some momentum going early in the third to something to build off of. Because you don't want to be in a situation where you need to score more than one empty net goal. Or, you know, a goal with your goalie pulled. But regardless, they didn't do anything whatsoever. And and I think it started in the very first period. We talked about the mentality of always feeling like you're playing from behind, always feeling like you have to play catch up, and it wears on you mentally. And I think that's exactly what happened. You could just see that they couldn't get anything going. Like, can you think of any big saves Bobrovsky made last night? Like, he played really well, but there weren't even like moments where you're like, okay, he saved the game, because he didn't have to.
No, the one chance that stands out was when McDavid went backdoor to Perry and he misses the net.
Yeah.
So that was it. That was the only chance where you go, oh, well, they missed one there. There was no posts. There was no sustained pressure. There was nothing from the Oilers. And that's just great defense by the Florida Panthers. But just going back to the first period, do you blame Stuart Skinner for any of that? Because it's 2-0 and they're in the hole again. And that mentality of like, oh my gosh, here we go again. We're down 2-0. We didn't even have many good chances in the first period, but I feel like we played okay and we're coming out of this period down 2-0. How can we come back from this? And 13-4, Tim, 6 games, the overall goal differential in the first period. It's insane how bad Edmonton is in the first period. But Stuart Skinner got the start. Big controversy. Pickard gets start in game 5. He gets back the net and his mind must be just mashed potatoes. Like, who knows what he's going through? The pressure, just the doubts in his mind. He's been pulled 3 times in these playoffs, I want to say, for Calvin Pickard. And now he's back in the net for an elimination game in the Stanley Cup Finals. What's going through his head when he looks up and he sees his 2 best defensemen just getting embarrassed? And oh, by the way, here comes Sam Reinhart, a former 56-goal scorer down on you. Like, it's got to be hard for him, don't you think?
Yeah, because I think he deserves some blame on that first goal, because his angle wasn't right, obviously, right? Reinhardt, you know, just slipped it just past him on his right side. But so, yeah, okay, bad angle. But in order to get that, like you said, he embarrassed the 2 best defensemen on their team, one after another. So it's like, okay, how much blame does he really get? The second one, that Tkachuk goal, snipe, obviously. And this has been a problem for the Oilers this entire series. Is that goal at the end of the period. They've done this like 4 or 5 times in the series, though. That was tough. But I think the one that you can really pinpoint Stuart Skinner on, obviously, was that third goal. Weird play.
Well, it's not even a weird play. I think it's a guy who just wasn't focused. I think everybody knew what he should do, and that's either catch the puck. And we heard Henrik Lundqvist touch on it in the intermission. He's like, it's maybe hard to come across the body for a catch. The puck was going so slow. He could have done it, but at least directed into the corner. And this is where his confidence is shot. He didn't know what to do. He's sitting there and he's in no man's land. He's standing straight up where he should have been in a goalie position or should have been ready. And he just, he froze. And that was it. Like, he made a brain fart and he did not know what to do. And he made a mistake. And it's at a time when you can't make a mistake. The Panthers were buzzing. You're down 2-0. You need it. Not even a big save, just not a mistake. And he made a mistake, and obviously he goes to Barkov, and he banks it up Reinhardt, and it's 3-0. And at that point, the game's over. The game is absolutely over. And the funny part of this was they cut to Chris Knobloch, and he has this quizzical look on his face. And we were joking that what's going through his mind is, did Stuart Skinner just cost me my job with that play? Am I now getting fired because of that terrible goaltender play? Because it was a bad. Like, you have to catch it. You have to block right into the corner. It wasn't a threat of a shot. It was a terrible, terrible play. But yeah, all honesty, if I'm Chris Knobloch, why shouldn't I be fired?
Like, it was a pizza strange thing. Play, I think, because even in the broadcast, they pointed out the Oilers stopped skating because they expect that you should be catching and tying that puck up. You can't just toss the rebound right to their play. Like, it was a very, very weird play. And I understand sometimes those floater ones are actually more difficult because they move like a knuckleball, right? It's a little bit hard to judge and time and all that. But yeah, so I think you have to give him certainly a lot of blame, but certainly Ekholm and Bouchard too. The worst game I think I've seen them play maybe ever at the worst time.
Yeah, you hope, and this is a weird thing to say, you hope or assume that they're hurt. Because the things that Bouchard was doing, just the non-hustle, the turnovers, just the non-focus, then Ekholm, it's hard to say you're terrible when it's the Stanley Cup Finals and you're playing a Florida Panthers team that's just humming like they're humming. But Tim, in the last two games, I feel like he was a direct cause of over half of the goals for the Florida Panthers. Either getting beat wide, beat right through him, turning over the puck, not being aware situationally. Like, every time I looked up, it was Ekholm getting beat and Evan Bouchard turning the puck over. It wasn't Nurse. It wasn't Kulak. It was those two guys who you need to be good. And we talk about the forward scoring. You know, your best players have to be your best players. They have to score. But your best defenders have to be your best defenders. When you're being matched up against the Florida Panthers and you're facing the Carter Verhaeghes and the Reinharts and the Barkovs and the Tkachuks and the Bennetts and these guys, you have to be on your game. You can't take shifts off. You can't make mistakes. And when I watch that game and I watch game five and even the whole series, how many mistakes did Florida make? Not many. Mikkola had a few in game four. But other than that, like, it was very rare that you saw, oh, that was a turnover. Or that D-man got walked. Or that was a bad play position-wise. It happened every game for the Edmonton Oilers with their biggest starts.
I think Forsling had a tough game one, and he was one of their best players. He was so good in games five and six, which is just, you know, they showed a couple of replays of him on the broadcast, just using his stick, breaking up the play, skating with McDavid as best as anyone can. And let's talk about McDavid, because he's getting a lot of criticism starting last night as the game was going on. Certainly this morning, we're all, you know, Wednesday morning quarterbacks here, but you want your best players, obviously, to rise to the moment. And you go back to last year. Games 6 and 7 last year, he had 0 points. He was a plus one. Games 5 and 6 this year, 1 point, and he was a minus five. And so he's obviously not at the Matthews level because he's gotten his team this far, two years in a row. But I think this is a good summary that I saw where last year we sort of felt bad for McDavid and Draisaitl. Like, there's only so much they can do. They're on an island. They weren't getting the support. But this year they were part of the problem. And it really showed up the entire series.
You know, I hate disagreeing with you.
No, you don't. You love it.
But I don't know if they're... Here's my opinion. I feel like both of those guys played great. I don't think they're the problem. And I was thinking about it last night. I was thinking about it all week, where when you look at teams that don't succeed and you look at the reasons why, and the obvious comparison is the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have high-end forwards. When you look at the forwards and you go, why aren't they winning? It's the high-end forwards. That's the reason they're not winning. When you look at the Edmonton Oilers and you look at how their offense flows and you look at how they score and the problem with this team, I don't think it's McDavid. I know he didn't produce in the finals, but I think that's more of a cause or a case of Florida just being so good. And Florida adjusted. And you talk about, you know, Chris Knobloch, should he be fired or not? Paul Maurice made adjustments. The first two games, McDavid was great. He was dynamic. He was flying out there. He was getting chances. He was facilitating. He was getting pucks on the net. He looked dangerous. And that's when I thought, well, man, Edmonton might take this. Like, this is a good sign for them. They go back to Florida. They get their matchups. And Paul Maurice, I bet you he had a conversation with Barkov in that line and Verhaeghe. And he said, I don't want you guys to score anything. You need to shut down 97. And from game three on, he was invisible. Absolutely invisible to him. He did nothing. And you talk about adjustments and asking players to do things. I don't think Knobloch did that. And so I don't place the blame on McDavid. I don't. I think he played a hell of a series. I just think Florida was better. So I know it's the easy guy to come after because he's your captain. He makes the most money. He's the best player on the planet. He should put up points. And maybe I'm being hypocritical here because I always say the best players need to show up. I feel like he did show up. I think he played as good as he could have played. But when you get the puck and you're used to having open ice or used to having opportunities or options, and last night, he didn't have any open ice. He would get the puck and there'd be a guy right in his pocket. And then he would get by that guy and there'd be another guy in his pocket in the neutral zone. And then he would get by that guy and he had Gustav Forsling right in his face at the offensive blue line. So there was so many layers to stop him. It was impossible for him to get going. And it was obvious what Florida did. And it doesn't take a brain surgeon to do this or to game plan this. It's like stop 97 and we win. And that's what they did. And they did it perfectly. And so, it's easy. But when you're, and this is another thing about the Edmonton Oilers, it's just, and this is why the Zach Hyman injury was so bad. But he wasn't even playing on the first line when he got injured. He was playing third line minutes. When you're in the Stanley Cup Finals, and it's game six, and you're still jumbling the lines, and you're still trying to find a guy to play on the first line, that's an issue. If I'm Connor McDavid, and I go out there, and I look at my wings and I go, okay, who's it going to be this time? Is it going to be Corey Perry? Is it going to be Podkolzin? Is it going to be Connor Brown? Is it going to be Jeff Skinner? All these guys, Tim, played with them last night. How do you get comfortable? How do you build chemistry when you have no clue who your right winger is going to be? Like, you don't. And then, oh, who's my left winger? Is it going to be Leo or is it going to be the Nuge? I don't know. There's no semblance of chemistry in this roster because they don't have the depth. But when you look at the Florida roster, you damn well know that when you see Sam Reinhart out there, oh, it's Verhaeghe and Barkov. Of course. They're not mixing lines. Oh, Lundell's out there. Oh, he's with Lucarelli and Marchand. 100%. Oh, there's AJ Greer. Oh, there's Gajewicz and Nozick. They don't mess with the chemistry. And I think that's what Edmonton, that's always been their problem. And some games it's good, some games it's bad. But if I'm Connor McDavid, I'm like, what the hell are we doing here? I want a consistent, and I saw it with Chicago with Connor Bedard. And it's frustrating for these high-end guys because I want someone to build chemistry with. I want someone who I can play 5 games with, 6 games with, 50 games with, 80 games with, because I'm good enough to know where he's going to be. I'm good enough to know what he's thinking. And when I don't have that chemistry, when I don't know who my line mate's going to be from shift to shift, I can't do it. And so I don't blame Connor. I really don't. I feel bad for him too. I honestly do.
Well, what do you make of this quote from him? Because he was asked, and, you know, I hate that these guys have to speak to the media right away. You know, just losing. Yeah. It's like, give him a day or something. Anyway, he said he was asked what went wrong, and he basically said, we kept trying the same thing over and over again, just banging our heads against the wall. Do you feel like that was a little shot at the coaching staff there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A major shot. Because he's very calculated with his words. He's usually very composed, especially after a loss. He's used to this, you know, he's used to being just grilled after a loss. And for him to say that, that's big because he is just screaming from the rooftop saying, we just kept doing the same thing over and over. What the hell are we doing? Like, why are we doing this? And it's frustrating for him. And yeah, so that's, listen, if I'm Knobloch.
Imagine a Magnum. Now imagine eating a Magnum Double Cherry. Now imagine biting into thick, cracking chocolate and tasting the delicious combination of berries and cream with an irresistible cherry sauce. Or indulge in Magnum Double Hazelnut, thick, cracking white chocolate with salted hazelnut sauce. Take your pleasure beyond with the new Magnum Utopia Double Cherry and Double Hazelnut. Magnum, true to pleasure.
Like, pack your bags, man. I would fire. I really would. If I was Stan Bowman. Stan Bowman got there last year. So that's not his coaching hire. He's gone. In my opinion, I'm talking to right. Connor McDavid. I'm saying, who do you want? Like, let's go. Connor McDavid is a UFA next year.
I know.
And if he's saying this about coach after the game, I'm doing everything in my power to make this guy happy. So I'm going him in year-end meetings and I'm saying, what do you think? You think he's our guy? Do you want him back? Because I'll fire his ass right now. Oh, great. Like, he'll be gone, Connor, by the time this door closes and you leave this office. Gone.
Knobloch has coached like 150 NHL games, including the playoffs, and he's been to the cup final twice.
Got an incredible record.
Who are you going to bring in that's going to give you a better chance? It's a roster issue. I don't think that – I mean, I understand last night the frustration, but the coaching issues and the roster issues stem from the makeup of the team. So, yeah, I get that.
I do think he could have done better. I do think he could have adjusted his lines or had a different game plan. They didn't change their way they played the whole time. They didn't adjust at all. They still played the same way. They were east and west, north, like run and gun. They didn't try the dump and chase. They did it for a little bits here and there, but then they would get away from it. And they did not try to play their game like they played all season long. They got sucked into Florida's game early with the scrums and the crap after the whistle and, you know, who's got the bigger manhood and the big bad bully. And they could not get back to their game. And so, yeah, I blame Knobloch. He's the coach. He's the one who sets up the game plan. So, yeah, he's gone. Yeah, absolutely gone. And I don't care how many games you win. Who was it in St. Louis that when it happened this year, the coach got fired and he got hired like two seconds later?
So Montgomery.
Montgomery. There's no allegiance or there's no, what's it called? When you're loyal, there's no loyalty in this game. Yeah, he's gone. What have you done for me lately? You've lost me two Stanley Cups that we could have won. And my best player, who I want to keep around, doesn't like you. So, boom, you're gone, bud. Sorry.
So, a couple more things on the game. So, Sam Bennett wins the Conn Smythe, which I think was the right pick. He led the team in goals. He was
unbelievable. Pete DeBoer. Go get Pete DeBoer.
Sure.
Sorry, sure. I'm still on this Knobloch thing. I think DeBoer would be great.
I do, too.
All right, anyway, sorry. Bennett gets the Conn Smythe. Sorry.
I think that was the right pick. And then you have the trophy ceremony, which is really cool because they handed it to Nate Schmidt first.
Hated it.
700-something games, has never won. I thought he was on the cup that won in Vegas, but I guess he was already gone. Why do you hate that?
Listen,
This is you right here. This is they handed it to everyone who hadn't won yet. And like Barkov was like the 20th player to do it. Like Reinhardt and Tkachuk, they were all at the, I mean, Barkov got it first, but yeah, I don't.
Listen, I'm a fourth line healthy scratch schmuck. I know my role. I want to see Jacob Megna, who sucks, get the cup before Barkov. That's what I want to see. I want to see Vitek Vanacek get the cup before Bobrovsky. Yeah, that's what I want to see. I want to see all these no-namers who never played in the playoffs get the cup before Ekblad, before Brad Marchand. That's what I want to see, Tim. Yeah, that makes for good hockey. John. I want to see all these guys who have no sweat on them whatsoever get the cup before anybody who actually earned it. Like, it just... It was just like, what are we doing? And the fans hated it too. They're sitting there like, yay, okay, oh great, this guy. And no clue who this guy is. Oh, AHL guy? Oh good, yay. And then finally they get to Bobrovsky and the guys, and everybody's already drained. Like, who cares? Like, it's been 20 minutes, you guys. Like, I hated it. I absolutely, and it's,
I'm sure you did.
Listen, it's, I skated cool, with Nate Schmidt. I know Nate Schmidt. It ain't like when Ray Bourque. You know what I mean? It's not like a guy. But why does he get it first? That's the comparison. Because if it goes right from Barkov to Nate Schmidt, that's rarefied air. That means you're like a surefire Hall of Famer. You've done your due diligence. You've grinded it out. You're a great player. You get the honor. It's such an honor to get that cup first. And I know, like, I've known Nate. He's a great kid. He doesn't deserve that. Are you crazy?
It's 90% of the team won 12 months ago, and they gave it to the guy who has played 700 plus games and hasn't won yet, who's also a well-liked and important part of that team. So I have no problem with that. I think Marchand should have been soon. I know he won, but it was 15 years ago. So
I think it should have been Marchand first, then it should have been Seth Jones, and then it goes into the heavy hitters. And then you get to Nate Schmidt after the captains, after Bobrovsky, then Nate Schmidt. That's my opinion. Listen, I'm entitled. You can't silence me. Silence is violence, and you can't silence me. So that's my opinion. Nate, I'm gonna read
this great quote from Sam Bennett on Marchand. He said, "As soon as he got traded here, he chirped me in the group chat instantly for our history in the last playoffs. What he's meant to this team, I truly don't think we win a Stanley Cup without him. His leadership, his will to win, it's inspiring. This is the best part. I was telling him before every game, we're going to follow you. And he did. He was a dog every night. He for sure could have won this trophy. He's a better player in person than I ever knew, and I'm grateful that I got to play with him. Pretty cool stuff. The way that that team, he's a really special player and a special guy. It was really cool. Another thing, I'm going to move on just because there's a lot to get to. Evander Kane. I'm sure you had some fun with this one last night. So he kind of throws basically invisible the whole series, right? And he throws this little hissy fit where he gets into it with Tkachuk, draws the penalty, and then he goes and chases them and whacks them again. He gets 10 misconduct, is out for the game. And then they talked about, okay, I don't see Evander out there on the broadcast in the handshake line. He didn't come back out. Sour grapes. Everyone's talking about it. Just, you want to say a word or two about this?
Why put more time on this? He is, and I think we all know how I feel about Evander Kane. It's well documented. I don't like him. I don't like him as a person. I like him as a hockey player when he wants to be good. And I think that's the frustrating conundrum with Evander Kane, because the potential's there and he just doesn't do it. Like when he came into the league with the Atlanta Thrashers, he was incredible. And he just slowly got better. And then he plateaued. And then I think his ego got a little bit too big for his britches. And now he just sucks, you know? And he's just a jerk. And he went through the whole thing with his wife. And then he went through the whole thing with the gambling. And he went through all the social media crap and this, that, and the other thing. And it's the juice is not worth the squeeze with this guy. Like, he's just a jerk. That's all it is. Like, to do what he did at the end of the game, like, why slash Tkachuk? I've been in that situation where it's like the coach puts you out there and like, oh, go stir it up. You're down 5-1, bro. Like, you suck. You did absolutely nothing this postseason. The team doesn't want you on their team anymore. Everywhere you've gone, you've just burned bridges. I've heard nothing but terrible things about you. Nothing. And then to go and do that and to just be so petty and to try to hurt somebody and to slash them. The first one I was fine with. It's the second one.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, can't like get bent, buddy. And this is a kid's show, so I can't say what I'm thinking, but it's like, he's just the worst. You know, when you just see he's the worst. And then he's probably going to come out and say, oh, they did this, that, and you know, it was deserved. And Tkachuk was saying this to me. And it's like, be the bigger man. Like, this is you're in the Stanley Cup final and you're acting this petty and you don't come out to shake hands. It's just, I don't want to spend too much. It's par for the course for this guy. He's a terrible person. And that's all there is to it. And this solidifies his jerkness to me. I don't even want to. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. What do you think? You probably like. Oh, so show passion. Show passion. Fighting to the end.
It was pathetic. No, it's sour grapes. You look like a big baby, and everyone knows it now.
Wouldn't it have been great if he did that, and Gadjevic comes in and just destroyed him, like beat the doors off him. That would have been the place would have been rocking. It would have been so great. But then to put it all into perspective, the guy he's slashing and going after and trying to injure him and ripping at his wrist with the stick. Tkachuk after the game says he had a tore adductor off the bone. I don't even know where the adductor is. It's in the ribs somewhere, right?
I don't know.
Not a clue. Who knows? Something's torn off the bone. And he also has a hernia. So the guy's just, you know, he's getting shot up with Toradol, so he doesn't feel it. And he's probably just can't even lift his arms when he's not on the Toradol. But you think he's going to do anything? He's like, I'm going to lift the cup. In about 5 minutes, get out of here. Like, go. Nobody wants you here. Just beat it. So, I don't know. He's just the worst. Like, the worst human being. So, let's move on before I say something and I get in trouble.
So, the Panthers, I think it's just, you know, it'll be fun to recap quickly just how they got here. Because in 2022, they win the President's Trophy. They average more than 4 goals a game, 4.5, just incredible hockey. They get trounced in the playoffs. And there's this big turning point, we all know, where they decided they weren't built for the playoffs. They needed to change their things, some things about how the team was built, and they overhauled their roster. They traded 115-point player Jonathan Huberdeau, their top scorer, and brought in, you know, so Matthew Tkachuk, and started this whole domino effect. And now, 3 years later, they've been to the Cup 3 years in a row. They won two of them. They have a blast playing the best style of hockey while making their opponents miserable. And I wanted to call out a couple of moves that helped him get this way. So I mentioned Tkachuk already. Traded Huberdeau, Weegar in a first. Filled that need. Gustav Forsling, arguably their best defenseman. They claimed him off waivers. They traded for Sam Reinhart, whose stock was low at the time in Buffalo. They traded for Sam Bennett, whose stock was low in Buffalo. Both, I think, had 40 points and 12 points each.
Traded Calgary. For, Bennett was in Calgary.
Calgary. Traded for Montour. Traded for big veterans at the deadline, like Marshawn this year, Tarasenko last year. They traded for Seth Jones, which was, I think, maybe as good of a trading as Marshawn was. And obviously, these are all home runs, and it's not easy to replicate something like this when you have, you know, just a great GM who makes the right moves and they all pay off at the right time. So I'm not saying why doesn't everyone do this, but it doesn't seem like it. Is there something that special about this group and this time that isn't replicable? Or do you feel like more teams should be taking, because be honest with who you are, like you always say, is like, are we a playoff team or not? And if we're not, let's go become one. And they did it, and it seems easy in retrospect.
Well, yeah, just looking at it on paper, it goes, yeah, okay, I can see that. But when you're, so you're the GM, Bill Zito, and you build this team, and you win the President's Trophy, and you set the record for most goals in a season, and everything's going great, you lose in the second round. Most GMs would go, ah, you know, bad breaks. Next year, let's roll it back with the same guys. We were so dominant in the regular season. That's what most GMs do. A, because, you know, you're expecting, you're hopeful. B, I think they're prideful, or I don't want to admit my mistake. Bill Zito is humble enough to go, yeah, this ain't the team, man. This ain't the team. We got worked by the Lightning. Like, we need to be better. And he goes out and he trades his best player, his highest point getting player in Jonathan Huberto. That's tough to do. That takes cojones to do that. And trading Mackenzie Weegar. Like, that is a big deal. And trading, like, it's a lot to get back one player in Matthew Tkachuk, who is unknown. So to be able to do that, first of all, he should win the GM of the Year every single year that they win the Cup, because that takes balls. And when you look at teams that can't do that, and they get stuck with their core, and they're too, I don't know if it's prideful or bullheaded or whatever it is, nervous, they don't want to lose their job, they're too scared to make those moves. Winnipeg Jets. Kevin Cheveldea, because all these stars, you got Connor, you got Scheifele, you got Hellebuck, you got Morrissey, you got Ehlers, you got Wheeler, you have all these stars, great, great, great players. You're too scared to trade them because we might get worse. I can't do it. And what do you have to show for it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Toronto Maple Leafs. You have all these stars, Tim. They're great. Tavares, Nylander, Matthews, Marner, Riley, all of them. You're too scared to trade them. And what do you have to show for it? Nothing in 8 years. Absolutely nothing. And there's more teams that are this way. Bill Zito could have easily gone down that road. Been a great regular season team. Make it to the conference finals. Maybe make it to the Cup finals and lose. You don't end up with a ring. He goes, no, that's not how I want to roll. He goes against the grain, swimming upstream. He trades his best player. Takes a huge gamble on his franchise, and he brings in a guy that he knows will change the culture. Then what else does he do? He goes out and he pinpoints teams that suck. And he goes, how can I take advantage of those teams? And he gets their cast off. He goes, oh, you're rebuilding? You want to retool? Okay, I'll take a Reinhardt. Oh, he struggled last year. Only 40 points. Not good. For a first round bust, probably. Up for a new contract. He's an RFA. I'll take him. Sounds good. Oh, Calgary. Sam Bennett, 12 points last year? Not good. I think he had 40 or 50 his first year. Then he's been a steady decline. Ooh, off-ice issues? I'll take him. Let's go. Get Sam Bennett. Oh, Forsling off of waivers from Carolina? Sure, sounds good. Brandon Montour, I'll take him. And then the best thing is, once you get those guys, players want to play there. Marchand, Tarasenko, Seth Jones, all had full no-move clauses. So I'm sure they had offers to go to other teams. They didn't want to go there. They want to go to Florida. They want to play with good players. So they waive the no-move clauses, and they go there. And that's how you build champions. It's easy, but it's difficult because it takes a GM who's not afraid to lose his job, because it doesn't work a lot of the times. And you trade away your best player, and then your team gets worse. So you have to applaud this guy. To see a need, and he goes and fills it. And like the teams that Edmonton hasn't done it. They have had a need in Edmonton for years now for a starting goaltender. A constant need for the last 7-8 years of Connor McDavid's tenure in Edmonton. We need a guy who we can trust. Oh, but we don't want to pay him too much. Oh, but, you know, we don't want to sacrifice. We got to sign this guy in the future. Oh, Evan Bouchard needs a contract. Oh, we got to make sure we don't get tied up long term. And now you don't have anything to show for it. So, like, how great would it have been if the Edmonton Oilers would have kicked the tires on a star goaltender 5 years ago? Instead of signing Mike Smith and Jack Campbell and Stuart Skinner and Picard and all these guys. And then just saying, you know, we're going to give $7 million to a guy, and that's our guy for the next 8 years. That's it. And then you have that box checked. And then you have probably have a banner hanging in the rafters. So Bill Zito's fantastic. And then what he says after someone asks him, he's like, what do you think about next year? He goes, I think we can bring all these guys back. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Because you know why he can say that? Because guys want to play in Florida. Guys want to play there. Do you think Stan Bowman will come to the podium and go, I think we can bring them all back? Not a chance. Can't even say it about your best player. I don't think McDavid wants to be back. So it's just, he changed that culture, Tim, in 1 year by bringing in Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk should have a statue outside of the ring for what he's did with this franchise. It's crazy. 3 years, he's been to 3 Stanley Cup finals, 2 Stanley Cup championships in 3 years. Why? So where do the Oilers go, Tim, from here? Because this hurts. This very much hurts them. Where do they go?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned already the goalie issue. That's the most glaring problem on their roster, I think. I think we know by now, and I think some of us knew it a long time ago, but I think I was still holding out hope. Stuart Skinner is not it. So will they make moves this summer to address that? I remember there was some report that we were even calling about goalies at the deadline. They decided not to do anything because Jeremy Swayman's name was brought up. And speaking of the Bruins, I think, man, you could have gotten Ullmark for not that much. And you probably are raising the banner right now. You know, yeah. you won the cup if you have Ullmark. So it's crazy. So I think that's a huge issue. And they have also a lot of expiring contracts. So they have Perry, Jeff Skinner, Brown, Kapanen, Frederick, who I think is going to resign, Klingberg, Bouchard, and 1 year left for guys like Evander, Podkolzin, Arvidsson, Henrique. So I think it's too soon to start predicting the roster moves. You know, they won the cup 12 hours ago, but I think it's safe to say this team's going to look very different starting next year.
I think it has to. And this is what it is like to be an Edmonton Oilers fan or the GM of the Oilers. You have your two top guys, and then how do we make it work with the rest of the team? Like, what do we do? Evander Kane in the last year of his contract, Zach Hyman's wrapped up for 3 more years, but after that, it's like it's the Nuge and then nobody. What do we do? How do we make this team better? Is this the destination? Let me pose this question to you, Tim. If you're a free agent and you have the opportunity to go to a couple different teams, we've had guys on our show. Oh, I've had 15 suitors. Pretty cool. Like JT Miller. I had the pick of the litter. Do you even want to play in Edmonton after what you've seen? Yeah, they've gone to the cup finals 2 straight years. Is this a team that you would want to go to? Be honest.
It depends on who I am. If I feel like I'm a top 6 winger and I can play with McDavid or Draisaitl, which is what they need, I think they're probably 2 top 6 wingers away from seriously winning a cup. But in addition to everything else they need to fix, then maybe, because I feel like I can get paid and I will, you know, earn a lot of points and money and all this stuff. But I don't know. The thing with, I think yes, and here's why. As I think about it, it's easy to be down on them when you compare them to the Florida Panthers, but the Florida Panthers are in a different category. And I think most teams in the league would love to be the Edmonton Oilers, where you have the talent they have, the playoff success they've had, and to lose to what's probably going to be a generational team in the Florida Panthers. Like, it's easy to look at them, feel like, and see all their glaring problems and their glaring holes in their roster and the glaring things they need to fix this summer. But on their own, they're still a pretty good team in a pretty good place with really good players. So I feel like it's not that bad. And if you take the Panthers out of the equation.
Yeah, I do think they're a destination. As long as McDavid is there, I think the big thing for this offseason, and you nailed it with the goaltender, they need to fix that. You can't go in next year with Picard and Skinner as your starters. I think that's career suicide for Stan Bowman if they don't address that.
Yeah,
both those guys are locked up next year, but you have to make a change there. That was a glaring weakness. Evan Bouchard, I think his value took a hit this year.
Yeah.
I don't see him in the top tier of defensemen anymore. I used to, you know, but he had his moments where he was great. But I think he falls in the 1B instead of the 1A. Like, he's not up with the Makars of the world, the Quinn Hugheses. I think he falls in the like $10 million. I think I would be happy with signing him long term, 8 years, $10 million. But then, like, do you bring back the other guys on the back end? Jake Wallman's going to want more money. Matthias Ekholm will want more money. All these guys are not young. Ekholm's 35. Wallman will be 30. Brett Kulak will want more money. They have to do something with the back end, and then Darnell Nurse is there forever. So it's not like they have an easy path to being a good team next year. There's a lot of question marks for Stan Bowman. Do you re-up all the veterans who showed signs of promise this year? I don't think you do. I think you try to get away from some of them, actually. You try to get rid of Arvidsson and Henrique and Janmark and these guys. They did nothing, Tim, for the most part in the playoffs. You have to build something that McDavid will want to stay for. And do you think he wants to stay for just a turnstile bottom six? Where it's just like, okay, let's go pick the bottom of the barrel. Which veterans are cut from their teams and want to come and play with me and try to get first line minutes? I don't think he wants that. He wants a culture that's concrete, that's something he can rely on. Gosh, I don't know. There's a lot of question marks in Edmonton. I would be very nervous if I was Stan Bowman, because I don't think McDavid's going to come back unless they sign him for an obscene number. And I think a number for him with the cap going up, I know it sounds silly, I think it's $18 to $20 million.
No, come on.
That's where he lives. No way. If he signs a $15 million deal, that's a team-friendly deal. Drysdale signed a 14. What do you think Mitch Marner is going to get this offseason? 14? 14.5?
Yeah. God.
So do you think McDavid's just going to go, oh yeah, Marner, 14, 14.5? No. He is worth $18 million, 100%. For what he brings to the team and what he does on the ice, $18 million all day out the door. I'm doing it. Well, but I think Edmonton offers him 16 over 8 this offseason. I don't think McDavid takes it.
He's not going to win a cup if he signs for that much money. It's crazy.
And we said it last year, and I firmly believe it. Last year was their best chance to win the cup. They had a great team last year. This year, they were worse. Next year, they will be even more worse. Unless they go out and do what Bill Zito did, I would gut this team. I would absolutely gut it. I would keep my top four. I would keep Drysdale, McDavid, the Nuge, and Hyman. And then I would just restock everybody. I'd keep Pod Colson, and that's it, Tim. I would get rid of everybody else. I would keep five forwards and go out and do my best to try to find people in the offseason. I would do my best to get rid of Darnell Nurse. I would keep Ekholm, and I would keep Bouchard and Wallman and Kulak. Those would be my four. And I would get rid of everybody else. I would get rid of all the goaltenders and try to find somebody else. And this retool. Because if you have those two top dogs, anything's possible. Anything's possible. I don't know if the people are out there, if the players are out there, but holy hell. Like, I don't think this is the team. But I don't think Stan Bowman has the balls to do that. I really don't.
It's a tough year to retool your roster because the free agency class is not super strong this year. But I think you're right. You know, where McDavid goes, the team goes. And Matthew Tkachuk had this great tongue-in-cheek quote last night that when you have a player that good and that talented, he's going to win a Stanley Cup one day, little pause, wherever it is.
Yeah.
So I think the guys around the league know he's not going to be there forever. Or maybe he's just throwing shade. Who knows? But yeah. And then a couple other quick little nuggets. Corey Perry is here. lost his fifth Stanley Cup finals in the past 6 years with four different teams, Dallas, Lightning, Canadiens, and, you know, twice with the Oilers now. And I do feel bad for him, but I would feel worse if he hadn't already won, although that was almost 20 years ago. So that's got to be pretty frustrating for him.
It's funny how perceptions change, because everybody hated Brad Marchand coming into this playoffs. Boston Bruins did hate it across the board. Everybody loves him now.
Yeah.
Dairy Queen, you know, just completely switched his persona, his public persona. Corey Perry, the Stanley Cup finals, 5 years out of six, like, just should be loved. Played for Montreal, got them to the Stanley Cup finals, like, a performer. Everybody hates him. You know what I mean? He's, other than the teams that he's played for, everybody seems to hate this guy. It's just funny how the two veterans can go polar opposites. But I want to go to the Florida Panthers here, because we talked about money for Connor McDavid. We talked about how the Edmonton Oilers can retool their team. Talking about guys who got major, major upgrades in their contract. Zeros to their contract coming up this offseason. Sam Bennett. So he comes in. He was making 4.425 this year. Where does his number fall? He's still relatively young. He's 28 years old. Obviously, we know what he can do in the playoffs. It's Sam Bennett. Where does he fall, Tim? If you're a GM and you're handing out contracts right now, what do you offer Sam Bennett?
What teams are going to offer him $10 million?
And this is a guy who's got his career high in the regular season for points is 51, and that was this year.
Right.
So he's not a guy who's going to light it up, but he brings the intangibles. No,
that's right. But also he's never been, I mean, he's been a top six winger forward for years now, but he's also the fourth or fifth best scoring. You know what I mean? He's not getting number one look in the power play and things like that. So fair, but this is what I was starting to say is okay, if you commit $10 million to him, you need him to be your 1C franchise all situations player. And it's going to be hard to get to the playoffs if he's that guy on your team. So it's it's good to have him there, but I think at the end of the day, he stays in Florida. I think he signed something for 8x8, takes a discount. He's in such a perfect situation. I don't see why you'd want to leave that. He's going to make a lot of money either way. I think he stays right there in Florida.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's 8. I think he goes 7 or 6.5. I think that makes sense for him, for the team, and for him. All right, moving on. The other Conn Smythe candidates, Brad Marchand. He's coming off his 8-year, $6.125 million contract signed with the Boston Bruins. He's always been underpaid, Tim. Always and forever. He's never hit that home run. And mind you, hitting that home run, he's made almost $75 million in career earnings. So let's just put that in perspective. The guy is set for life. He apparently really likes it in Florida. His family seems to have been adopted by the Panthers pretty seamlessly. What is his number? He's 37 years old. Coming off, we saw what he did. Fountain of Youth. He played fantastic. Limited minutes, but I think that helped him. Playing with two young Finns who were just outrageously good with him. Does he leave that scenario and go to a team where he can make more money? Or does he stay in Florida and take a team discount? What's his number? Because he could get, I think, $8 million on the open market.
Yeah, this is a strange one. And this is I think the big question for him is going to be, what term are teams going to offer? Is he going to try to get a 4-year contract? And is someone going to be stupid enough to offer it? You might, because that might be the only way to get him is to get him for 4 years. And then, what does that look like a year or two from now? I don't know. This is another thing. And going back to Zito's comment, why not just stay? I know he's been underpaid for most of his career. Maybe he wants every dollar he can get, but he's still made a lot. He's still going to make a lot. Why not sign 2 years, 3 years, $4 million, $5 million and just win another cup? You fit in so perfectly. Why mess with that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you compare him to maybe a Malkin who re-upped with the Penguins. He makes $6 million a year. I think that would be a good comparison for him. But yeah, I think he stays. I think these guys are old enough and mature enough and realize what they have, that this is a good scenario. Why leave this spot? We have a good, way of living. The team is great. We're going to win Stanley Cups and we're playing in South Florida. So I really believe Bill Zito, they will bring all of these guys back. And if I'm the Eastern Conference, and I'm the NHL, get ready, because these guys seem motivated still. They seem like they have a great staff and a good head on their shoulders, where they're not going to get too ahead of their skis like Evander Kane thinks he's the man. We could be looking at Tim a dynasty where it's 4 out of 6 years with the Stanley Cup. So I'm all here for it. I think it's great. You have a good young core. You have a good older core. And then you look at Sergei Bobrovsky. How long can he keep this up? He's 36 years old. He's entering the last year of his contract, but he doesn't seem like he's aging at all. So it's very exciting what the Panthers are doing. Anything else, Tim?
Well, I think the key player that is going to be gone this summer is Aaron Ekblad. I think for two reasons. One, I think you need his money to commit to guys like Bennett and the guys who I think are probably more important. And second is that they don't value him as much. The report I read, and I don't have it in front of me, but they want him down more $6 million. He's making 7.5 now, and he's 29, so he's in his prime. He's going to be one to make. He's going to want more money, not less. So I think he's going to be gone. Someone else is going to bring him in.
You think so?
He's willing to do that.
Again, I do. I don't know. The grass is not greener. So if they're going to give him 6 years at 8 years at $6 million, I think he takes it. He's already made $63 million. So. And mind you, that's not before agent fees and taxes and stuff, but he's made $40 million in his life. So it's money you and I can't wrap your head around. It's every 2 weeks, Tim. Every 2 weeks, he's getting a couple $100,000, So what more do you want? Do you want to win Stanley Cups, or do you want to make a couple more $1 million per year? I think these guys, they just want to win.
Well, but point counterpoint, he's already got two. Maybe now you go get the money,
Maybe. No, you're right. Absolutely right.
there's a lot of teams that will pay a lot of money for a number one defenseman. I think he's a low end number one defenseman, but he probably is a number one. So we'll see.
Yeah, only time will tell. But I think Bill Zito has done a good job for life after Ekblad, bringing in Seth Jones. You got Gustav Forsling. You have Mikkola.
Yeah,
I think the grass is definitely green and the horizon is bright for this team. And I don't see them getting worse next year. And I fully expect them to be in this position next year in the chase for the Stanley Cup. I don't know. Anything else?
One more thing. Everyone's talking about this, so I want to just throw in this quip and get your take on it. There's only one team that forced the Florida Panthers to Game 7, and that was the Toronto Maple Leafs. Do you think this is going to create any instill any false sense of confidence that, hey, you know what? We're the second best team. We were pretty close. What do you think?
No, of course. This is what Toronto does. And we talked about it last year. Oh, if they win Game 6, that means they're going to get to Game 7, and they will have this little nugget to hold on to, or this little seed of like, oh, you know, we were the second best team. Of course, this is what Toronto does. And they'll just make it like they weren't the worst team, and they don't have any issues, and they just ran into the hot team. And they did it with the Boston Bruins, and they did it with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and now they're doing it with the Florida Panthers. Oh, if it wasn't for that one, this or that and the other, Brad Marchand in overtime, well, we would have won the Stanley Cup. It's just great. It's just great for the Toronto Maple Leafs because it just makes them do the same thing. We got to re-sign Mitch Marner. It's going to be fantastic. So I don't. They're hopeless. Those guys. Any chance they can pat themselves on the back, they take it. No accountability to those millennials.
That's all I got. That's all I got.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you very much for listening to the show. It was a great season. We'll probably catch you guys again on Monday. I'm going to take a couple days off. Tim's going to take a couple of days off. We'll regroup, get ready for the draft, get ready for free agency, and just take a little breather and celebrate the Florida Panthers. But thanks for joining us. We appreciate the support. We'll catch you guys next week. Cheers.
Imagine a Magnum. Now imagine eating a Magnum Double Cherry. Now imagine biting into thick, cracking chocolate and tasting the delicious combination of berries and cream with an irresistible cherry sauce. Or indulge in Magnum Double Hazelnut, thick, cracking white chocolate with salted hazelnut sauce. Take your pleasure beyond with the new Magnum Utopia Double Cherry and Double Hazelnut. Magnum, true to pleasure.